Right now, we're joined on the phone by Tom Jensen, who is the director of public policy polling. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website. You can find more news and analysis online at PPP Polls on Twitter as well. Today, talking about the state of the 2022 Senate race in North Carolina, with some new high-profile candidates having recently entered, plus that special election over the weekend in Texas and what that means potentially for next year's midterm. Tom, thank you so much for being with us this morning. How are you?
Good. Good to be with you.
So let's start by talking about the Senate race in North Carolina. We've talked about it before when there were already a few high-profile candidates in the race to replace Richard Byrne. Now we've got more. Sherry Beasley on the Democratic side, former state Supreme Court Chief Justice. She entered the race with a bunch of fairly high-profile endorsements, including quite a few elected officials here in Orange County. On the Republican side, Pat McCrory, former governor, entered the race, and House Representative Ted Budd also in as well. And that's in addition to Jeff Jackson and all of the other high-profile candidates that are already in there from before. So where do things stand now?
Well, it's really hard to think of a Senate race in North Carolina where this many serious candidates were lined up to run. And I guess it speaks to the fact that we just don't have open Senate seats in North Carolina very often. The last one before this was in 2004. So this is the first time we've had this sort of open run to try to run for the Senate. I think right now that the Republican primary is especially interesting. You have Pat McCrory, who was governor, and I think, especially to many of us in Orange County, we would say he was very conservative as governor, but a lot of people within the Republican Party think he's not conservative enough. And both current Congressman Ted Budd and former Congressman Mark Walker are sort of running to try to appeal to those people who think that McCrory is insufficiently conservative. McCrory is definitely starting out with the advantage in the primary. He has much more name recognition than other candidates as somebody who was governor, as opposed to just representing 1/13th of the state. But I think there's a precedent for McCrory's run that should concern him a lot, which is that when Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, came back to try to run for governor again in 2018 after he'd been out of office for 8 years, he started out with a big lead in the primary. And then he ended up losing the primary to a state senator who was running as sort of more of a right-wing candidate, more of an anti-establishment candidate. And I think there's real risk for McCrory that he may be what the Republican Party wanted to be 10 years ago, but he doesn't really fit into what the Republican Party wants to be now. So it'll be very interesting to see how that dynamic plays out.
We were talking about McCrory earlier this morning, that he's on Twitter, he's been on Twitter kind of launching his campaign by complaining a lot about cancel culture, which is kind of the go-to conservative catchphrase these days, like of trying to appeal to conservative voters. Do you think that works for McCrory, or should he stay in his more moderate lane?
Well, it's hard to say. I think one thing that does work to McCrory's benefit is that the runoff rules in North Carolina have changed over the last few elections. It used to be that you had to get 40% of the vote in the primary to avoid a runoff, and McCrory, I think, definitely would be in trouble if he was in a one-on-one with one of these more sort of anti-establishment, right-wing sort of candidates. But now you only have to get 30% to avoid a runoff in the primary. And you would think that maybe running as a more sensible sort of Republican maybe could get you to 30%, but McCrory clearly is making a calculation that running as a more sensible sort of Republican is not enough to get you to 30%. So maybe the Republican Party is just so sort of wrapped up in this grievance culture that that you have to operate that way to have any chance of getting through at all. But one thing that's definitely true about this sort of race to the right is it means that whoever does emerge from the Republican primary as the nominee may not be in as strong of a position for the general election as they would be if they did try to run a little bit more towards the center.
That's speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling. That's the Republican side. On the Democratic side, we've got really two very high-profile, strong candidates in Sherry Beasley and Jeff Jackson kind of leading the ticket or leading the primary race. Where do things stand there?
Well, the Democratic race is more sort of everybody's undecided because none of the candidates are really that well-known. And I would actually add former State Senator Erica Smith to the list of serious candidates in that race, simply because she got 35% or so of the vote in the primary for the Senate last year. So that did show that she has some sort of constituency. We'll see if she still continues to have that much constituency in a race where there's another very strong African-American woman candidate. It may be that with Sherry Beasley also running, that gets to be a more difficult journey for Erica Smith this time around. But definitely three people who are sort of proven vote getters with statewide followings. Sherry Beasley's shown that through her up until this last fall sort of undefeated record in statewide office. Erica Smith showed that with the support she got in the primary last year. And Jeff Jackson, even though he's never run statewide before, has, I think, been one of the most prominent Democratic legislators statewide. He's really done an effective job using social media to sort of build up a statewide profile for his work, even though he only actually directly represents Mecklenburg County. So Democrats are going to have a lot of choices for that race. And then the interesting question is going to be, is this nomination actually something that's really worth having, given the overwhelming historical precedent that the president's party does a very poor job at the polls in their first midterm? It's going to be sort of interesting to see if this is something where all these Democrats are fighting for a real chance to go to the U.S. Senate, or if it turns out that they're just fighting for the chance to be the sacrificial lamb to whoever the Republicans end up with.
Yeah, that's the other key question as we head into next year. Where do things stand on that national race? I mean, we've talked so often in the last several years about just how nationalized every election has become. So whatever the national trend is, that's how it's likely to go in North Carolina. What are the trends that we're seeing?
Well, there's sort of a two-pronged answer to that. Number one is that so far we have not seen the big shift away from the president's party in the polls that we were seeing, for instance, at the same time 4 years ago with Donald Trump. 4 years ago at this time, it was already becoming clear that Democrats were in for a big election in 2018 in a way that we're not really seeing in the polls yet for Republicans as it relates to 2022. But the one sort of caveat I would give to that is that we had a big poll in Texas on Saturday, which was the first sort of D versus R special election for Congress since Biden got elected. And Texas's 6th congressional district is one of those places that has moved strongly toward Democrats over the last two election cycles. It's one of those diverse, well-educated, suburban sort of districts that have been the key to a lot of Democrats' success over the last 2 years. This is a district that voted for Donald Trump by 3 points in November, but it's somewhere that had voted overwhelmingly Republican by like 20 points sort of before Trump came along the scene. So this was a good test of whether these sort of well-educated areas that have rebelled against Trump, is that a temporary thing or is that a permanent thing? And in the two-party vote for that special election in Texas on Saturday, the Republicans got 62% of the vote. The Democrats only got 38% of the vote. So Trump wins by 3. Republican congressional candidates on Saturday won by 24. It's just one election, but that is the kind of thing we typically see happen to the president's party during the midterm cycle, is that things start to move away from them. And at least in that election in Texas on Saturday, we saw things start to move massively away from Democrats and back towards the Republicans, back more towards how people had historically voted in that area before Trump came along and caused problems for Republicans with well-educated voters. So it'll be interesting as we go forward to see if what happened on Saturday in Texas was an isolated incident or a sign of things to come.
PublicPolicyPolling.com for more numbers and more information. You can also find more news and analysis on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.